Before I get to the prepared remarks, I'll do my usual and speak and shoot from the hip a little bit, but we'll get them both today, prepared and, for lack of better term, unprepared. It's my pleasure to be here, very much so. It's always an enjoyment to come up to Duluth, Minnesota. The one thing that I hear, no matter where I go throughout the state of Minnesota, it's always the same message that is ringing in my ear from the constituents, from the people, the Minnesotans, and that is they tell me, Governor, or as what most of them all refer to me, Jesse. I guess I owe that to my signs. But the message is always the same. Jesse, don't change. Jesse, we elected you because of who you are. And I think part of who I am is the fact that I'll tell you the truth as I see it. And that's what you're going to get. From me, you're not going to get a prepared statement full of hoorah, generally. You're not going to get necessarily a flowery picture, because I think we all in this room know it's different, don't we? We all know what's facing greater or rural Minnesota, and not just greater or rural Minnesota, but rural United States of America. It's been some great prosperous times for America these last 10 to 12 years, but one segment of our population is not achieving prosperous times right now, and that is very much our agricultural business and our agricultural communities, which of course obviously means rural or greater Minnesota. So be prepared today for my prepared remarks, because they are facts as I see them, and they are probably not going to be what maybe some of you came here to hear. Some major rosy picture on the horizon, because I think we all know different. But I think as I look out over the crowd, we all know that this is America, don't we? And we all know what we're all made of. And we all know that if Jesse Ventura can become governor, anything can happen, don't we? Because there weren't too many people that painted a bright, rosy picture for me a little over a year ago. You know, they didn't say that I could win. They didn't say I had a chance. But I believed, and we had a campaign staff that believed, and we had volunteers and workers who believed. And lo and behold, it came to pass, and the truth happened, and I won. So now you're stuck with me, whether you like it or not, for 3.5 years more. But I like it, and I say it, and I say it with a smile on my face, because before, again, I get into my prepared remarks, there's no job I would rather be doing right now. And contrary to what you may read in the news media, Minnesota is my focus. I attend meetings and do the job to the best of my ability. I'm putting in many times 10 and 12 hour work days. The only problem is the media only wants to cover me on my time. So they give you the impression that somehow I'm delinquent of my job because I wrote a book. I might add, if memory serves me right, Governor Carlson wrote a book. Yet, no one said anything about that one. I guess his was okay. You know, I don't understand how one can and another can and you're not treated equally. And then as far as my venture into pro wrestling back again, well, call it nostalgia. Call it whatever you want, but it's on Sunday. I don't know about you, but I don't work Sundays anyway. That's the one day I've told for all Minnesotans, and one of my messages was for all Minnesotans that I don't care what you're doing, take one day a week, have it for yourself, have it for your family, and do what you want to do. And don't be dictated by your job. Now, granted, we know farmers don't always get that type of day. They many times have to work 7 days a week because it's the growing season. But, you know, I don't. I'm not growing anything right now. So I don't work Sundays. And wrestling takes place on Sunday evening, ladies and gentlemen, so it is not going to affect me one bit. Monday morning, I will be back in the office being your governor. And I will say this, I sure don't get any grief from the kids about it. They like it. Now for the prepared remarks for a moment. First of all, thank you, Commissioner Jerry Carlson, for the warm introduction, and let me take a moment just to talk about Commissioner Carlson, who, believe me, doesn't have to be working for me. An extremely successful businessman in the private sector who truthfully doesn't need this job as head of economic development in the state of Minnesota. But again, he's a Minnesotan. He saw it as time to serve, and he stepped forward, and I couldn't be happier because he is doing one outstanding job. I will tell you that right now. What a difference a year makes. Last year, you welcomed May Shunk and myself to St. Cloud at a candidates forum. And there certainly have been a few changes since that night when we drove ourselves, participated without any media hoopla, and then drove back down Interstate 94 with dreams, but no real sense of what lie ahead. Since the election, for one, I've learned to save the morning paper until after my workout. For another, I have a new appreciation. I have a new appreciation for the word adjourn. Well, I'm going to make you think a little. But most importantly, nobody in Minnesota now makes the mistake of thinking there is such a thing as a wasted vote anymore. As I stand here as your governor now, ready to talk about the future of rural Minnesota, that's a very important thing to remember. Each one of you, as citizens who care about your own futures and the futures of your communities, have likewise an obligation to get involved. Marcy McLaughlin is one of those people who gets involved. Her work with Minnesota Rural Partners is a good example of what I'm talking about. How many of you work for Minnesota Regional Development Organizations? Raise your hands, please. Okay. Any of you who have worked to put on this event for the past 2 years at this time, please stand up. Any of you who have worked on this event to put it on over the past 2 years, please stand up. Stay standing. Ladies and gentlemen attending this summit, please join me in acknowledging the work of these citizens who are involved and making a difference through personal will and determination. Today I'm going to talk about three things. Number one, it's time to quit talking about rural crisis and start talking about rural change, coping, and common sense. That's personal responsibility. Number two, it's time to get our arms around a long-term strategy that makes financial sense for rural Minnesota. That's about finding an appropriate role for state government in defined, accountable, responsive ways, working together with other partners. And number three, it's time to cultivate the next wave of civic leaders in rural Minnesota who can work closely with individuals, families, employers, and organized groups to breathe new life into communities. That civic involvement of the hardest kind right there at home. I want to start with this mindset about change, coping, and common sense instead of crisis. Since I have been governor, there have been a series of so-called disasters. Depressed hog prices, 100-mile winds, flooded farm fields, those just name a few. In every instance, I've heard, "Governor, come and save us." Or, more futile yet, "Washington, come and save us." Time and again, there is the temptation to look to government with a mixture of hope and anger. We have cultivated in this country a breed of politician who will pledge to make things better. Standing knee-deep in water or in the presence of tears at a kitchen table, surrounded by hurting families, there is the great temptation to make promises. We shouldn't make promises, especially those we cannot keep. With taxes hovering near 50 cents on the dollar, the public has spoken out strongly in favor of tax cuts. The public has spoken out strongly in favor of more accountability for everything that government does. That includes rural people who would rather have money in their pockets than to send it to St. Paul or Washington. This year, we did send some of it back. The sales tax rebate checks are literally in the mail as we speak, and next year income taxes will see a permanent decrease. But remember, and remember well, it's physics. What is the first law of physics? How many took physics? Whoops. Oh, well, it's just the press. Now, how many passed physics? It's okay, I got a C. I passed. But remember, it's physics when we think about government. For every action, what's the first law of physics? For every action, there's an equal reaction. When something happens here, something happens here. You can't cut taxes without seriously reconsidering cutting spending. The two can't happen in government, with the one without the other. As I always tell my staff, nothing costs zero. Any dollar government spends comes from someplace else. I would be misleading you at this rural summit not to start with this simple, honest truth. Any dollar that gets spent on rural development or ag relief or offsetting declining enrollment in public schools needs to be carefully considered based on what makes common sense over the long term, not what makes for a good band-aid over a crisis. Let's look at the difference, long term or a quick fix band-aid. When people are in crisis, they are living day to day, not looking ahead. Leaders help people see further than just tomorrow. Leaders help remind people that there is support all across Minnesota. In fact, just a quick phone call or a quick drive from anyone's home. Leaders remind people who feel they are in a crisis that solutions come from accepting changes, taking a learning attitude, and getting help if that's what is needed to find a solution. Leaders are you at this summit. In almost every rural community or nearby regional center is a quality higher education institution. At a time of almost full employment, our great individual challenge is to stay skilled for the next job that we need or the next job that needs us. At a time when many people in our agricultural economy are whiplashed by fast changes, and not many of them good ones, it's important for farmers and their families to connect with many local, county, state, and federal services that are already funded to provide help. Maybe it's the Extension Service for financial help. Maybe it's the University of Minnesota Crookston putting together a package for the next great marketing idea. Maybe it's encouragement to take advantage of mental health services and turn the paralysis of personal stress into new abilities to make good decisions. What I do know isn't the answer is that one size fits all. Short-term government bailout time and time again. It looks good in an election year, these short-term bailouts. Oh yeah, it looks good there. But if that type of thinking solved anything, ladies and gentlemen, we wouldn't be in this room today, would we? I told you, you're getting the truth. Government solutions will always be more expensive, less flexible, and less effective than an individual's solutions, especially in a so-called crisis. We already spend $33 billion every 2 years on all funds, everything from tourism to education to workforce development to technology. To suggest that we are not already up to our elbows with rural development would be a serious, serious mistake. In fact, a significant share of the budget is redistributed from the metro area to rural Minnesota for all kinds of programs, including health care, higher ed, K-12, and local government aids. The next wave of questions are about what our state needs to be healthy, a healthy, competitive state, and what it means to have healthy, vital communities in a time of rapid change all over. Some of this is a very big picture policy discussion. Some of it isn't. The health of mainstream rural communities has a lot more to do with whether people who live in that town actually shop there, or whether they drive 30 miles to the nearest Walmart, or head all the way to the Mall of America. The ability to keep a rural doctor nearby also depends upon whether local people will trust their care or prefer to drive to a regional center to see a network of specialists. One of the best thinkers in Minnesota on this subject is right in this room today, Commissioner Jerry Carlson. Another one is legendary for his work finding a new way to align services, Human Services Commissioner Michael O'Keefe. Both of these big thinkers are serving in my cabinet right now, with the likes of what I consider other big thinkers like Met Council Chair Ted Mondale, Finance Commissioner Pam Wheelock, Revenue Commissioner Matt Smith. They are not afraid to ask tough questions about the changing state that we live in. They are not afraid to say no to short-term thinking. Together, the Cabinet and I have cautioned the sprawling metro areas to think about smart growth. And together, we will challenge you to imagine a different rural Minnesota than the one that has existed in this last half century. If this is making you feel uncomfortable, then I'm doing my job. I came to this job for results, not politics. As you may have figured out by now, I don't care about someone's political party. I don't care about doing something because it's politically correct or the politically correct thing to do. I'm dead serious about protecting a balanced budget and living by budget principles that I've written down, which if any of you desire to get them, they'll be on the table over there to my left. And we'll distribute as many. We didn't realize the crowd would be so big. So share if you need to. And we have those principles here at this summit for you all to read, and they are principles of common sense that I will stick by. I would ask you to read these budget principles and communicate with me or my staff if you feel that they don't represent, I say don't represent, Minnesota common sense. As of right now, they have guided us through one biannual budget, and they are set up to guide me through my second one. You can hold my administration to them. So, what do the Ventura budget principles mean for rural development? That leads me into the second thing I want to talk about today, government's role in rural development. Government should do that which individuals cannot do for themselves. That's a quote from President Abraham Lincoln. Let me repeat it again. Government should do that which individuals cannot do for themselves. And I believe that. What government does, it should do well. We need to evaluate for results, reform programs that are not working, and be willing to live within our means. Those are all budget principles published in those sheets. We also need to provide incentives for doing the right things. Put decisions closest to people. County beats state, state beats federal every time. I'll give you a good example of what I'm talking about right now. And it's a very hot subject that, guess what? It's going to get even hotter. It's about farm relief. Last session, I stood firm for spending $10 million on targeted relief to farmers who were hurting. I figured that we could let families decide, set up a system to let them apply at their county offices for property tax relief, and spread the money over a number of years. This was $10 million for 1 year. There would be additional monies for years down the road because I knew this crisis was longer than 1 year. Nothing in me said this crisis, if you will, was going to end anytime soon. To me, this is a huge rural development issue. Agriculture problems have topped the list of requests for me to travel and listen and fix problems. The legislature, you may remember, decided to do it differently. Over my objections, $70 million was spent this year. This 1 year for relief to every farmer, all of them. This included hobby farmers, farmers who made money last year, everybody. Guess what? Yesterday, a plane load of my commissioners and staff, all appointed to something I call the Farm Cabinet, went to northwestern Minnesota to listen to farmers. Anybody here want to guess what they heard? Anybody? Not pretty close. One legislator publicly asked me to call a special session for more relief. One farmer in the room asked what we were going to do next year when the crisis is still going on. Folks, we spent it all. It's gone. In 1 year. That's what was the legislature's choice. Now, I allowed this to happen. I didn't sign the bill. And if those of you that don't know how the system works, when a bill comes to the governor, he can sign it, he can veto it, or he can simply not sign it, and in 3 days it passes into law. Well, I took a view and I said, look, this is the wrong decision to make, but there are farmers that need help so badly, I'm not going to veto it. Because you know, if I'd have vetoed it, what would have happened? Big newspaper articles. Governor doesn't support farms. Rest assured, if I'd have did that, that's what you would have read about in the press. So I chose to simply allow the legislature to make their decision, and I allowed it to pass into law without my signature. I did that for the reason to show that I did not support this type of spending over a 1 year period, because, ladies and gentlemen, I knew, or I had strong suspicions of what lay down the road. And certainly, I think I'm correct. It's time to cope with change and use common sense, because we stand firm for targeting and decide that that's not about giving something to everybody, or we give up on tax cuts and balanced budgets and just hand out relief 1 year after another, after another, after another. I'm proud of the consistent position I took, even though at every turn I ran the risk, as I still do, that I will be accused of not being for farmers. Nothing, absolutely nothing, could be further from the truth. But the right thing to do was the hard thing. And I went on this road alone over at the Capitol. The bottom line is that we need a better handle on what government ought to do when individuals cannot. My vision for rural Minnesota is not the one that really matters. It's yours. Your decision for rural Minnesota. But we're working very hard, my administration, to get our arms around what the state government's role should be. The next big census will almost surely show that we are continuing to flock to big cities. With that comes high class sizes, housing shortages, a health care crunch, congested roads, the need for mass transit, demand for more technology investments, more public safety, and on and on and on. It's expensive, and the problems are very, very real. There is a rural flip side to these problems that you understand all too well. We no sooner put out the biggest K-12 budget in the state's history than the rural schools were asking for funding for phantom students to help with declining enrollment. We no sooner put together a critically important initiative for light rail transit that will help all of Minnesota, not just those commuting in inner city, than there was an uproar about the new administration not supporting rural roads and bridges. I had already said many times that those items belong in next year's bonding bill. It's got to stop being about urban versus rural, or metro versus outstate. That's no more constructive than trying to get attention for a crisis every time something beyond our control happens. Over the next months, every single one of my commissioners will be involved in answering this central question: where are we heading, and what is the role of state government? Can it be better coordinated? Yes. Some of you may have ideas about how that could happen right now, and we need to hear about them. There will be changes in a way the executive branch looks at functions during my term once we get a total handle on everything that's already in place. This may strike you as peculiar, but realize that my first tour of government took over 1 month, and I only met a fraction of the 49,000 employees who are on the payroll. That basic lack of communication and alignment, which has been further confused by the way the legislature sets up pet projects that don't connect for anything else, has hurt rural development. No more, ladies and gentlemen, quick fixes. In addition, with your help and support, I believe we can identify and free up resources within the existing budget. Working together, we can go to Washington, D.C. with federal policies that stand in the way of progress. We've already tackled the stupid 60-year-old law that sets milk prices based on how far away the cow is from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Excuse me, I'm used to talking Minnesota. Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Let me tell you, that was mind-boggling to me when I saw that. I don't get it. What has Eau Claire, Wisconsin got to do with dairy farming other than there's tons of cows around? So I looked at the situation and said, when I learned about it, and said, well, to make it fair, let's switch to Beaumont, Texas. I had my staff look up and they reported back to me there isn't one milk cow in the county of Beaumont, Texas. So I thought at least that would give us 1,100 miles for our dairy farmers. But I think you know what's altogether better, ladies and gentlemen? Let's tear down these archaic laws and regulations and allow our farm and rural communities to compete. Because we are the best, we have the best, and we have the best technology to compete worldwide. We just need to get the government doggone it out of the way. Here's another one that's coming. If we want to promote innovation by farmers, Why aren't new alternative crops eligible for federal crop insurance? Isn't it interesting that only one barrier is standing in the way of what could well be a lucrative hemp crop in Minnesota? Guess what it is? Federal policy. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time we unite with an effort and tell the federal government that we in Minnesota can create our own policies and take care of ourselves, and we certainly don't need them to make that decision for us. These and other things directly affect the main streets of rural Minnesota. So does international trade. It is the job of state government to connect the world with Minnesota products. Commissioner Carlson keeps telling me, go where the money is. So off we go to Japan this November. Some of you may not know that Japanese television carried my inauguration live. Of course, I wasn't wearing a double-breasted suit at the time I became well-known there. But they still like me, and they're very fond of me. Whether it's the Japanese or the Germans or the Canadians or any of our other huge trading partners, I pledge to capitalize on the interest in our tripartisan experiment to keep the world's consumer dollar coming to Minnesota. Commissioner Carlson also tells me that business needs to go where the workers are. Rural Minnesota, this is your day. The Department of Trade and Economic Development has a strategy to tie growth of the Twin Cities companies with communities around the state where there are available workers. Maybe even relocate workers who are interested in living in a community where there are lower class sizes, affordable housing, and a great, great quality of rural life. Imagine that by the year 2010, if you market well, you could turn around the next census and show professionals moving back to you. But there are successes already. 2 weeks ago, Entronix International opened a high-tech plant in Eveleth. Over 100 good-paying jobs are being added there thanks to this company that is based in Plymouth, Minnesota. Why? Because there are skilled, available workers in northeastern Minnesota. In Sebeka, in central Minnesota, Cross Consulting expanded to provide software programming services for Northwest Airlines. In both cases, the Department of Trade and Economic Development was important in making these expansions work well for rural Minnesota. It also works well for urban Minnesota because we are at a common sense point of needing to grow smart instead of just sprawl. You know, for so long, the Twin Cities has dealt with sprawl like you deal with confetti in the wind. Throw it up and see where it goes. Well, that day is coming to an end. Private investors and banks also play a role. Minnesota Corps and U.S. Bank should be recognized for working together to create a rural equity fund. Businesses can't grow without it, and rural Minnesota will benefit from this $2 million investment by U.S. Bank. No fewer than six agencies are involved in housing strategies, including the new one for rural communities. This past year, the mining and steel industry also got a boost with the Minerals 21st Century Fund. This exists to make equity and loan investments in mining and steel technology for the seven taconite companies and hopefully new ideas. It is my expectation that the state partnership in efforts like this pay off in thousands upon thousands of high-paying jobs for a long, long time in northern Minnesota. Now to my third point and the last point. It's ultimately you, the people, who will make the difference long-term for rural Minnesota. Believe me, it's been a steep climb in loose gravel since November. But what made this country great is the idea that any citizen can become governor, or mayor, or county commissioner, or head of the regional fund, or the researcher who discovers the next taconite idea, or the teacher who works every day to help parents and their children, or the farmer who finds a new way. Where we live is up to each of us. How we live is also up to each of us. The generation before us invested mightily in the nation's finest network of roads and schools and colleges and public buildings that serve us to this day. It is our generation that will build the superhighway of technology and make tough decisions about new realities that come from changing both where we live and how we live. I urge you to think clearly, without politics, on how to cope with those changes and bring common sense to the answers that we can afford and deliver us, that will afford and deliver us the best results. I look very much forward to working with rural Minnesota over the next 3.5 years. Now I realize my prepared speech today didn't bring a lot of smiles, but then again, is the crisis in rural Minnesota something that brings smiles? No, it isn't. But I believe in you, and I hope you'll believe in us, and together we can move forward with not quick fix ideas, not band-aids that give us money today, give us money next year, give us money the year after, but that we can truthfully look for keeping rural Minnesota vibrant, for keeping it a place where we all know is probably the best place in the world to raise children, to have them grow up and become adults. And I ask for your help, and you certainly will get mine. Thank you very much.